Should we close the...
You got your question?
Hey, yeah, I got a question.
Good, good, good.
We look forward to the Mark question.
Oh, shit. I didn't bring it in. I got the draft of the... Remember the magazine was here?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
They have a... It looks great. It's going to look great. But they have a picture of the show and sitting around. It's a good pick.
Oh, good.
Yeah, very cool. What about that ad in there? Has that ever been accomplished? Has it? Oh, I forgot about it. Yeah, okay.
Did it look like we were all sitting around the Cotton Club, or did it look like we were in a sweat lodge?
Kind of sweat lodge.
Is that the weird?
Kind of sweat lodge.
How does Arizona always wind up getting these strange national
always.
Stories?
No, Florida picks the cake for the weirdest. Florida always has the school teachers sleeping with the kids.
Oh, well. We're up there, though.
I was just down south, and there's a big problem with a lot of students sleeping with their teachers.
Yeah.
Especially where they're homeschooled.
Wow. Well, you won't be going back to the deep south anytime soon.
Thank you, folks.
Are we rolling?
I'm here all week.
All right. Okay.
Yeah,
good.
We're live.
Did you hear that joke?
I didn't even know we were on.
You're in trouble, sorry, dude. Well, you got to listen for the music, didn't you hear it?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Well, welcome everybody to the show. We're down at Marley's. Appreciate the support of Marley's here. We're in the Cotton Club, so.
You got to be specific. This is the downtown Marley.
Downtown Marley's, because there's one in Chandler and there's one in Goodyear now, or something
right.
like that.
This is the original.
Like, yeah, the original. We're the original. Yeah, yeah, which has done great. And we got Carrie is not here this week, but she'll be back next week. And we have Mark Cordes and Steve Clausen and Gibson McKay.
Hey,
welcome,
hey, Gibson.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate
Thanks
you being
for having
here.
Me.
And. Gib has done lots of things, but been right in the middle of politics for a long time here in Arizona, so he knows all the players and has helped a lot of the famous and infamous over the years. And now you're with Veritas. Now tell us of Veritas. You got a cool building down there on
We're down there on Roosevelt and 4th Avenue, down at K Street, Arizona, with all the rest of the lobbies.
You're a K Street whore, aren't you?
Yes. K Street whore.
And probably one.
Absolutely. We are Veritas, a public affairs firm. We do a lot of lobbying. We represent a lot of firms and a lot of companies, everybody from American Express to ExxonMobil and Motion Picture Association and some folks like that. So
nice.
We stay busy.
Those
we
are
stay
good.
Busy, and they're good clients, and we're happy to be a part of the Arizona political scene.
Yeah. All right.
Is it Veritas that's translated? That's truth, isn't it?
Well, it is, except we spell it V-E-R-I-D-U-S.
Oh, Veritas.
Because Veritas was taken.
I know, because I had stock in those guys.
We
tanked. Well, I did a corporate gig for them, and they go, hey, if you got any money, you don't know what to do with. Buy some of our stock, and it went from 50 to 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Veritas is the truth, and Veritas is the truth as we see it.
So. Well, that makes sense.
It does.
I like that.
It does make sense. Now, Mr. Cordes, do you have a question for us? We'd like
yes,
to start off with a question now.
I do. And this is actually kind of inspired by Grant Woods, although most of my life is.
Yeah, right.
Of course. You are the wind beneath my wings.
Oh, great. The ship beneath my shoes.
Since you've been on, growing up, you didn't travel much.
That's correct.
Kind of a Mesa rooted, tethered to Mesa.
Yes.
Now,
we
Jesus,
had no money.
It's like, where's Waldo with this guy?
Sorry.
He's everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, where'd you just get back from?
Got back from Greece and Turkey.
Okay.
A couple of days ago, this is very, it was crazy. And on Friday, last Friday, this shows up on Thursday, so last Friday, we woke up in Istanbul and went to bed in Phoenix. And I thought, wow, how many, in the history of the world, the zillions of people who have lived over time, hardly anyone's ever been able to do something like that. We went to, for example, in Turkey, we went to the House of Mary, where John took Mary after the crucifixion, took him, and so it was in Turkey outside of Ephesia, and it took him like 3 years to get there, to, pretty short distance. And we went from Istanbul to Phoenix you know, in one day. It was just crazy.
Well, not to brag, but one time I went from the Egyptian pyramids mm-hmm. to Paris to New York in the same day. It was in Vegas.
I saw that joke.
Did you see that coming around the corner?
Made a little quick trip to Monte Carlo, too.
I know. I was sitting there trying to scramble for the third place.
Could have been wrong.
The giveaway was the Egyptian pyramid. Damn it.
Yeah.
I'd like to. We'll cut that out in post.
Yeah, cut that out.
I'll redo it.
Yeah, okay.
All right, here's the question. This is kind of, it's got a little Grant Woods-ish flair to it, and a little Roman Polanski flair to it. If you had to leave the country,
yes,
could not live in the United States anymore, mm-hmm. and let's just make it, you can't go to Canada and live there, and you can't go to Mexico. It's too easy to get back into the country. So where would you relocate? Where would you live, and why?
Italy.
Okay.
Because I don't know what it is everywhere. I've gone... some places you really like. Very few places I have not liked a lot. Most places kind of indifferent. Like Greece, for example, this time. I was kind of indifferent about it. It was fine. And if you did the islands, I think, the right way, which, you know, maybe I will someday. I'd like to. But, you know, that takes some doing, you know, where you have your own boat with chartered and all that stuff. Obviously that would be fun. Turkey we really liked this time. We like Turkey a lot more than we like Greece, which really surprised us because we went for the Greece, not the Turkey. But Turkey was great. But other places we've gone, you know, it's great, but we always say, okay, where are we going to go next? We got to go back to Italy.
Wow.
And it's just, and why? I think it's the culture. It's the way that people live their lives. They, I think they've got it right. At the food also, by the way, which is fantastic. But it's all about, they don't just talk about family values and living for them for today. They actually do it. You know, they're not running around on their Blackberries and missing their family, not being around their family. It's all about other things. Italy's an interesting place because you wonder, if you look at how they've dominated and how well they've done in the art world, in architecture, in music, in food, in all of these sort of things, you wonder, well, why aren't they, haven't been a world leader for a long, long time? And the reason is, it's frankly not a priority over there for them. They expect the government to be mediocre. It's just like, oh, yeah, that's no big deal. Now, art or food, God forbid, you know, the mediocrity of the food in the United States. But if you don't, I don't know if you read last summer, there were several famous operas where the crowd went insane booing them off the stage because they were so offended that, how dare you? So the things that are important to them, you know, one other thing, they're closed 1 to 4. Almost every place is closed, and what they do is they all go back to their house and they have their big family meal. Everybody is there, and that's sacred. Now, it's not like they don't want to make money. Everybody wants money, but staying open compared to missing that in their lives is just, they wouldn't do that. It's just, it's not.
So the crowds went crazy on that, because that happened Sunday in Glendale.
Yeah, well, there's a priority, you know, really into the football, and that was
so Italy.
So I would say Italy for sure. Yeah. That's an easy call for me.
And you think you and the family would assimilate in everything?
That I don't know about. One thing that surprised me about Italy is how few people speak English, as opposed to, for example, Turkey. Almost everybody spoke English. That was surprising to me. Not everybody, but almost everybody. So I don't know that I haven't. It isn't a situation. We spent a lot of time there. We've spent over the last 5 years. We probably spent 8 months there.
Oh wow!
And no, we were never like adopted as one of their own. I can't say that. So I don't know whether we would assimilate in. I think for that you'd have to maybe pick a different country.
But you could.
Yeah. I could live with it. Yeah. Believe me, I could deal with it.
All right, cool.
Gibson.
Well, boy, I'm a big fan of it. I love Florence.
Mm-hmm.
I do love Florence.
It's my favorite city.
Is it?
Yeah.
It was a fabulous time. I will say the south of France, There's a little town outside of Nice called Antibes. It's where Picasso did a lot of his painting. Mm-hmm. Lived in this little castle. And I got to say, you really got to look to find something wrong with that kind of area of the world. I mean, you know, you got naked women on the beach, and you got great French food. I mean, they're a little less asshole-ish than they are in Paris, you know, because they're in the south.
Is that a medical term?
Yes, it is. It is.
That's a lobbying term, isn't it?
I would say the south of France. Yeah, that's a lobbying term. Asshole-ish is a lot. But I like Antibes in the south of France.
Good choice.
Well, we got two there.
Yeah. Is Hawaii off the table?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hawaii's in the United States, I think.
Yeah, we might want to check your...
Check your atlas.
You know, I think...
1940
Alaska's
call.
Off, too.
Yeah.
1940 call.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that, yeah. No, it's... I've never been to Europe or South America or anywhere else, but if there was one place, it would be Australia. And, I mean, I've done some work for a radio station down in Melbourne. And I know a couple of people down there.
You've been to Outback.
Yeah, I've been to Outback. Having a joint trip on the Bobby.
Can by I the way, Outback, I went there for the first time. My son, a couple of years ago when he was in high school, was a busboy there. And he was like, hey, you know, the food's pretty good here and all that. So I can't remember why, but we were stuck somewhere. And I went, sucked. That place.
Which one did you go to?
He must have missed
between
the Bloomin' Onion.
He was in the East Valley. He was in there, between here and Tucson. I thought, well, you know, it can't be too bad. You go in, you get a steak. I mean, a steak's a steak. No, it's not, actually. It's a big old piece of leather.
I was going to hit them up for a sponsorship for the show.
No,
so much for that. Yeah.
They
suck. But, yeah, I think Australia would be a place where an American would feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
The language is the same. The culture is, you know, very similar. It's, from what I've seen, it's a beautiful country. Plus, I get to see water go down the drain backwards. It would be really cool.
I'd like to go down there. I've never been there.
Well, not only were we close together on this couch, we are close in our pick. I'm going to go New Zealand.
Okay.
I've never been there. I've got my wife's got some family there, and it looks fabulous, and she's got all kinds of...
You
got
to go there.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How long does it take to get down there?
It's like 15, 16 hours. Because a friend of mine who I used to work with at Fox 10 that lives down there, who's now got dual citizenship, just came back for like a three-week vacation to the States. That's the other thing. It's like Europeans take like August off
or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. But, yeah, I think he went to LAX first and then Seattle and stuff. But I think overall it's like 15, 16-hour trip down there.
I know that.
Well, when you fly to Australia, you cross that international timeline. Mm-hmm. So when you get there, it's like earlier than when you left or whatever. So I get off the plane in Australia and went to a payphone. I called my house. I answered the phone. That is weird.
That is doesn't seem right.
That's just spooky.
That's crazy.
What's weird about it is, like, say, you know, done some work for a radio station down there, and it's usually over the holidays when the regular American correspondent takes off. So I'm usually on during Christmas and New Year's. And so New Year's Eve, I will join them here from the States. And it's like 10:55. We're like an hour away from the new year. They've already been in the new year for like 16 hours already.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's kind of fun. Yeah, they're still drinking. It's great.
Yeah, we lost a lot of time on the way there. We went on a Tuesday morning. I think our plane left at 9:30, and we got to Athens at 7:30 p.m. the next day.
Mm-hmm.
9:30 a.m. on a Tuesday, we got there at 7:30 p.m., and we had an eight-hour layover in Brussels, which I liked because we went into town and had breakfast and walked around. Then we had lunch. Then we went back. And so now I've been there. I scratched that off the list. Although, like, it looked pretty cool. That was a pretty cool place. So, yeah, that's all good.
Well, I think those were four good. And you know what's cool?
Good on that.
I could live in any one of those four places, I think, and be happy. I think we all could. So.
Yeah. Now, I want to tell you, we're going to get to the president here. But so remind me to tell you, I brought a little excerpt of his speech to Turkey. If you remember, he made in April. And in fact, why don't we go ahead and do that? I think, I don't want to just be reading this whole thing because it's long, but I just excerpted the last part. These people, and when we get to the Woody, that will be front and center, who continually knock the president and, oh, he's done nothing right and, you know, he's just all bad and all this. I really don't get that. I think it's so bad in this country the where it's gotten. And myself, I think on foreign policy he's done very well. I have big problems with him on domestic policy, big problems. But on foreign policy, I think the difference between he and Bush is night and day, and it's a positive thing. And I'm hopeful that he's, I have to say, even though Gibb and I are close to Senator McCain, I tried to study as much as I could over the last several weeks since I had a little time on Afghanistan. I read so much pro and con on these proposals. I'm not convinced, I'll have to tell you, on Afghanistan. I do not think that's going to work. I'm not a military guy, but you got to go with your gut sometime. And my gut was right on the Iraq war, that it was going to be a disaster. My gut was right that the surge would work. And I'd like to believe the people who are saying this will work. I don't think it'll work. I just think this is a loser. If it was going to work, I think it'd take 7-8 years, and that's not worth it to me. I hope what the president does is kind of reconfigures in Afghanistan. We focus on the border with Pakistan. We focus on some of the population centers. But this whole idea that we're going to go and turn that country around, it's never been done. It's not going to happen, in my view, with all due respect to the generals. But spending a little bit of time over there in Turkey, very interesting. Istanbul was really cool. We liked that a lot. Very mysterious. You know, at certain times of the day, and certainly when the sun was going down, you hear this all through the city. Right. People are, these cries are going out, the singing, the prayers, and you can hear them from all, coming from all parts. It's really wild. People walking around, you know, dressed in, like it's Casablanca, you know. And it is where East meets West, you know, that's the whole idea here. So the president, first, the president, for him to go there, I thought was great. Turkey is a big ally of the United States and very important. They're in NATO. But they are about 98% Muslim. So you can see the fine line he had to walk here and how difficult that speech would be. And I'm just going to read you the last little part here just to show you. I thought it was, I mean, this makes me proud that he's president of the United States. This is how he ended it. He said, "I know there have been difficulties these last few years. I know that the trust that binds us has been strained, and I know that strain is shared in many places where the Muslim faith is practiced. Let me say this as clearly as I can. The United States is not at war with Islam. In fact, our partnership with the Muslim world is critical in rolling back a fringe ideology that people of all faiths reject. But I also want to be clear that America's relationship with the Muslim world cannot and will not be based on opposition to Al-Qaeda. Far from it. We seek broad engagement based upon mutual interest and mutual respect. We will listen carefully, bridge understanding, and seek common ground. We will be respectful, even when we do not agree. And we will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over so many centuries to shape the world for the better, including my own country. The United States has been enriched by Muslim Americans. Many other Americans have Muslims in their family or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know, because I am one of them. Above all, we will demonstrate through actions our commitment to a better future. We want to help more children get the education that they need to succeed. We want to promote health care in places where people are vulnerable. We want to expand the trade and investment that can bring prosperity for all people. In the months ahead, I will present specific programs to advance these goals. Our focus will be on what we can do in partnership with people across the Muslim world to advance our common hopes and our common dreams. And when people look back on this time, let it be said of America that we extended the hand of friendship. There is an old Turkish proverb, you cannot put out fire with flames. America knows this. Turkey knows this. There are some who must be met with force, but force alone cannot solve our problems, and it is no alternative to extremism. The future must belong to those who create, not those who destroy. That is the future we must work for, and we must work for it together. I know there are those who like to debate Turkey's future. They see your country at the crossroads of continents and touched by the currents of history. They know that this has been a place where civilizations meet and different peoples mingle, and they wonder whether you will be pulled in one direction or another. Here is what they don't understand. Turkey's greatness lies in your ability to be at the center of things. This is not where East and West divide. It is where they come together. In the beauty of your culture, in the richness of your history, in the strength of your democracy, in your hopes for tomorrow.
That's very well said.
Unbelievable speech, I think. He, you know, and through the body of the rest of the speech, he dealt with some of their specific problems they have, how he's, you know, urged them to settle these things, dealing with Israel, dealing with the Palestinians. We're here. We're your ally. We want you to be part of things. We want you to be admitted to the EU. So we're not in the EU, but you know, we have some influence.
Sure.
I just thought it was look, we need Turkey. We need the Muslim world not to view us as enemies. So, you know, to go in and tell everybody to go fuck themselves doesn't really work. I mean, I think we've learned that.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess what? They've got their own history and their own culture, and they're very proud people. So I think showing them respect and not being afraid to talk about these issues was pretty phenomenal for an American president. And people say, oh, what are the results? Well, first is a quantum leap forward in opening up the possibilities, and then things take time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've said this before in a previous show, one of the mistakes that we have made in foreign policy, and for a long time, is we will go into a country and with the assumption is they want to be like Americans.
Yeah.
They don't. The Turkish, you know, the people of Turkey want to be Turks. You know, the Iraqis want to be Iraqis. You know, we can certainly show them a different way of life, but they still want to be themselves. They don't necessarily want to be Americans. They may want some of the freedoms we have. They may want a different way of doing things. And, you know, if that's what they decide they want, that's fine.
That's a real tricky business for us. Is Turkey's great. They've chose a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And they chose to be our ally and to be in NATO and all of that. Some other countries, though, we have to realize don't choose that. They don't want that. And yes, every person has the right to be free, and we want all people to be free, but there's only so much you can impose on people.
Mm-hmm.
And Afghanistan's a good example. It's been the death of so many empires. I just don't see that happening there.
What's interesting when you talk, when you hear the difference between Obama speaking and Bush speaking just in a few months, I mean, you really don't get this kind of, we're going to democratize you and we're going to do, you know, I mean, that's the difference that I mm-hmm. see in his speaking and his, you know, whatever you want to call it, kinder, gentler way.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a different way of speaking to the world. And, you know, that's the balance he's trying to strike, it seems.
And you don't get the line, you're either with us or you're against us.
Right.
In which I think alienated some people the wrong way.
Well, let me give you an example, the access of people thing. Spelling it out like that, people go, well, what's the harm in that? I mean, you got Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, so, you know, look, those are bad folks, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, let's just take right here. Let's take Turkey. There's our ally, right? They got enough on their hands here being our ally and being in NATO and, you know, being pro-Israel. Well, guess what? They border Iraq and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's one thing to say Iran and Iraq are evil, and then Iran and Iraq say to Turkey, what do you think about that? There's your ally. Do you agree with them? We are evil. We're inherently evil. Well, they can't say that. They're right on the border. I don't think for us to say that. We wouldn't say that about Mexico right on the border. So it's just you gotta be respectful, and you gotta know, be a little bit of a student of history, and know where to draw the line and how to diplomacy is an art, and
maybe
you need to practice.
Having these guys as back to back presidents will work to our advantage. Maybe it'll be like good cop, bad cop.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
where,
I think so.
Where Bush was, you know, he was not eloquent at anything, but at saying the right things at the right time. So maybe now that Obama can come in, so let's just see which way works better. Maybe mm-hmm. this, you know, I think that it's misguided to think that just because he speaks nicer and kinder. I mean, they burned him in effigy the other day in mm-hmm. Different places around the globe. So I mean, you know,
no, there are. Exactly, and I don't think anybody thinks, oh, well, yeah, everybody's just going to hold hands and sing kumbaya. Some people may think that.
People said that, you know. Yeah. Oh, now everyone's going to love us.
No,
that's
not
true.
But you can make progress with people with whom you have fundamental disagreements, and hopefully you can at least unite around some very basic common principles, and terrorism and the killing of innocent people, you would think we could unite around that. I mean,
I think, you know, what's and as we move into this discussion, it seems important, though, that as we, you know, there's no doubt his approach may be different. But I certainly think that even from a policy perspective, though, you know, you have, you know, you take Afghanistan, mm-hmm. for instance. Whatever his decision needs to be, his inaction is really troubling to me. You know, I think certainly it's an extremely complex situation, and I don't pretend to know that all the variables to even go into that.
But we can't know.
But I certainly think, you know, this is not an exercise. You know, this isn't an academic exercise. There are men and women over there right now.
Time to decide.
You know, August, October, the highest casualty months in the history of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. They're having some internal debate.
This was the right war.
I don't mean to disagree with Grant here, but I mean, I certainly, you know, the difference is what happened is when he was running, you know, against Hillary, Hillary said, you know, hey, I voted for Iraq, you know, we should be there. And he said, I wouldn't have done that, but the real war is in Afghanistan. And now he's having to deal with Afghanistan, and he's stuck with it, and he doesn't know what to do. And so let's not take politics out of this.
No, it's there, but it's a loser. And I think it's time for him to decide, but I think he's ready to decide. The problem is he's got to work this once he decides, and I think he's getting ready to go to where is he going? To Asia or somewhere on the 10th. Yes. So he really doesn't have time. I don't think he has time now to do it prior to that, so he'll do it when he gets back. It tells me he's not going to just do what they ask for, and which I am grateful for. As I said, I think that's a loser. I look at the. You know, there's another. What's the guy's name? McCherry, General McCherry.
McChrystal.
Yeah. Not to pin all this. He seems like a fantastic guy and mostly positive. But there is a big question mark, I have to say, on him, and that is this whole Pat Tillman thing. He is the guy mm-hmm. who signed off on that.
Yeah.
And if you look at his, I did see a little clip of his testimony. I think Senator McCain was the one questioning him. Mm-hmm. What were you doing? Why did you sign off on that medal? Because he was saying, you know, great valor and fought off the enemy and all that. And he said, well, I didn't read it carefully. And, you know, I didn't really look at that. And I didn't really catch the distinction between friendly fire and the enemy. That was flat out not credible. I mean, I'm sorry. I hate to say that's lying.
Yeah.
Because I do not believe that. Who is a more famous soldier in the U.S. military than Pat Tillman? There wasn't one.
Right.
And when he's killed, you didn't even look. You're telling me you didn't look at his commendation? You just passed? I don't believe that.
Yeah.
And then they continued to cover it up. So why did they do that? Well, that was a big propaganda effort. They were trying to use that death to support the war and the effort over there by turning this guy into a bigger hero. And that's just flat out wrong. Yeah,
that episode
wrong.
Is a real black eye for the military, as great as they may be.
Yes, it's
this
outrageous.
Is one thing that just was
well,
wrong.
And this guy did it. Yeah. So all the good things I've read about him, and then you know his whole strategy here, this whole idea that we're going to go in there and slowly win over these villagers, you know, kind of one by one, village by village. Afghanistan's a gigantic country. This is not going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. So, you know, whatever the president does, I think we all get behind him and hope to God it works.
I just did a gig the other night with a couple of comics that just got back from Iraq, and they've been to Afghanistan numerous times. They were talking about
big difference.
Being in those Black Hawks mm-hmm. going through Afghanistan just for hours, nothing but darkness. And then out in the middle, and mountains. And out in the middle of nowhere, you'd see a little bonfire. And then hours of darkness. And they were just like, oh, my God, it's just one big
forget it.
Cave-riddled.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of look, I understand there's terrible things going on there, and we wish a better fate for the people there, and what about the women and all that. But you know what? That's true in 50 other countries. So it can't be about that. We can't save everybody. It's got to be about our own national defense. And well, I think you can do this in a different manner.
Then if I want to be an isolationist, mm-hmm. I almost could.
Yep.
But that's all predicated on, then you've got to come back here and seal these borders.
I'm for that, yeah. You think we could do that.
You would think so, right?
Well, I'm telling you, we can't. We don't, but
we have never had the will to do it.
No, we
because
haven't. It's bullshit.
We can't let all this stuff brew in other parts of the country, the world, knowing that they want to come here, and it's a feather in their cap to pull a 9/11.
Yeah. No, this is one thing that we should do, and I'm saying ultimately if the feds won't do it, the state of Arizona should do it. We should seal our own border. And these people who tell me we can't do it, I'm telling you we can do it. We got to figure out a way because, you know, people have their own views on the immigration debate, and I'm very sympathetic to people that we invited here, and they've been here for 20 years, and their kids are American citizens and all that. Having said that, I have no sympathy now for people who just keep streaming over here. We don't want them here anymore illegally. And yet, we don't stop them. We don't stop at our own border. And we can do that. It's not easy, but it can be done. I think you're right. We don't have the will to do it. We should do it.
And I think, you know, you want to talk about border regions. You know, the real problem, I think, with Afghanistan, not to take us back, but... You know, there's this border with this nuclear power called Pakistan.
That's what we got to focus on.
And so, you know, really, if you want to talk about Afghanistan, it's Waziristan. That's where the Al Qaeda is. The Taliban is not this monolithic. You want to go kick them out of the government and in a month or whatever you can. But if you really want to focus your efforts, you really have to look at Waziristan. You know, those are the areas.
That's what we should be doing.
You want to talk about problem areas. That's where all of this
is why we can't withdraw. That's why if he wants to send in another 10,000-20,000 troops to bolster those efforts there and in a few other pockets, fine. I'm all for that. But 40,000 ain't going to do jack if your goal is to take over the whole country eventually again.
McChrystal asked for 80,000.
Yeah,
people keep kind of glossing over that. They're going,
it would take.
Yeah, exactly.
Not only that, but it's going to take them, I think, the way I read this thing, it's going to take that way probably for another decade before you could possibly succeed. That's stupid.
Right.
Well, we cannot do that. And I always I have to go back to, you know, a simple question. You know, I have three sons. Is that worth it for my sons to go out there and be killed out there in the middle of that godforsaken place for this? I have to say it's not. It is not.
Well, no, and I sure don't want to do, you know, everybody says this is going to be another Vietnam. The one difference is, and believe me, I don't want to see anybody die, but no one drafted is going to die in this.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
You know what? All of these people are over there because they enlisted.
They did.
And I'm not saying that makes them expendable, but I'm just saying there is it.
That's
a
distinction,
difference.
Although I will say if you look at there's a lot of analogies to Vietnam in Afghanistan. I mean, the same old stuff. And these guys who keep saying, just listen to the generals, whatever the generals say, that's what we got to go by. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, but I've heard from very few generals that I don't want to fight. I don't want any more troops. I would like to go home.
Yeah, let's come home.
No, this is not what they're all about. And guess what? They're wrong. We have a civilian presidency for a reason. He calls a shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to put it in perspective, I actually was down at the Phoenix Public Library today doing some research through old Arizona Republic archives, and I was in the early 1980 edition of the Arizona Republic. Guess what the big story was back then?
Afghanistan. Yeah.
And the Soviet Union.
The Soviet Union and how Jimmy Carter was going to react to it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So, I mean, it's been going on for decades.
Yeah.
So.
And next time you're going to go back a few years before that, and you'll see where we got Hawaii as a state.
Really?
You'll see that.
Is it still a state?
Wow. If not, then we better get a new president.
Alaska's in there somewhere, too.
So. Wow.
Well, it's going back to that, though, Pakistan is the key, I think, to
it
all
is.
This. I mean, their military.
If they weren't there, then there was really no reason to be doing this anymore. This whole deal about Osama bin Laden, okay, whatever. I mean, that didn't.
No,
Well, their whole military is down on the border with India, like India is going to invade Pakistan. You know, if you want to take. If Pakistan wants to take care of this problem. Bring them.
We
bring
can't
their
let them hurt
military
India.
Into
call centers.
Yeah.
No, but I've maintained.
Right.
If you want to declare victory in Afghanistan, get Osama bin Laden, get that group, get out.
Well, mainly get out, but we have to deal with that. Pakistan has to hold.
Right.
There, or else we're screwed. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Okay. I have another. Let's go to domestic politics here. But I'm going to go to here in the state, and you can. Give me your reactions, I have decided what I want to do in this. You know, lots of talk about whether I was going to run for something this year and or in 2010. And it's not too late, but it pretty much is too late. So what I've decided to do is I am going to help Governor Brewer, and I'm going to work on her re-election, or her election for to governor. I've agreed to co-chair her campaign. Mary Peters is going to co-chair. And we'll have a cast of thousands, you know, playing various roles, I think, in the campaign. But let me just say why. It's been interesting for me because before Governor Brewer took office, we had dinner. I had not really supported her much in the past. I mean, she's in the West Side, I was in the East Side, so I really wasn't involved. I didn't support her when she ran for Secretary of State. I supported the Democrat because I really didn't know her too well, and I didn't really, and I did know the Democrat, Chris Kaminsky, and I like him a lot. But with the governor getting ready to take over, she told me she was going to call him as she saw him, and she wasn't going to be afraid to take the tough stance if that's what was required, because it was pretty obvious the state was going to be going into some very difficult times. And I told her that if she did that, I would stick with her and that I would help her and I would do everything I could to help her make this state great now and, more importantly, in the future here. And I'll tell you what, I think it took her some time to move an administration from kind of a center left administration to a center right administration. She's got all her people in there finally. That's always difficult. And she just has had to deal with a catastrophic budget like we've never seen before. And of course, other people around the country have had to deal with it, most of them poorly. And I think the governor handled herself very well. She did not give in to the right or the left here. And it was a very lonely battle for her. She's completely anti-tax. Her career is as an anti-tax conservative. However, when you're trying to make up a structural deficit, a real-time, right-now deficit of over $1 billion, and you cut, you got to come up with something. You can't just say, oh, well, sorry, well, I'm never going to do anything. There's nowhere to go. Unless you really start affecting public safety and important things. So she's came up with this idea of a temporary sales tax for 2 years, then it goes away, and we get through this period, which we will, and we haven't devastated people's lives and devastated schools and universities and public safety. We've kept things going, and then we get rid of that tax. It goes away automatically. I think that was a reasonable approach, and I think she should be supported for that rather than being criticized for it. But more importantly, she's committed, and I've had a lot of conversations with her now. We're ready to go here now on trying to make this state a great state again. And my view is that in Arizona, the days of us being able just to coast along and do great are over. I don't think we're going to see that again. I think we've seen other states who have been great. They've had kind of mediocre, short-sighted leadership, and they wake up one day and they're not so great anymore. I think we can go that direction here, or we can go a different direction. And so I think in education, it's time now to figure out how we fund and how we manage a first-rate education system in Arizona, K through university. I think she's ready to tackle the difficult issues relating to health care. She's ready to tackle transportation in an innovative, creative, conservative way. We'll see where we go. But I've got lots of things I'm excited about there. Some of which we talked about, the bullet trains and I'm not opposed to toll roads. I agree with the governor. I think she and I both used to be opposed to those. But now you got to deal with the real world here. Got to deal with 2010. If we need this and this is the way to go, we got to look at it. I think she's going to, most importantly, try to make this state the place in the country where businesses want to locate for really good companies, really good jobs. We're going to make it very business friendly here, not a bureaucratic mess, low taxes, and we're going to figure out how we attract the jobs that you want to attract, not just next year, but 2015, 2020, 2025. You can't attract those companies unless you have a first-rate education system. We're going to have to do that. And then we'll deal with these other issues like borders. And the point is, she's ready to go now. She's proven her courage. And I just think, you know, what are we going to do? Why should I sit around and we're oh, well, maybe this guy, maybe that guy. And but that'll be 2 years. We got another 14 months before anyone would take office. Then they've got to get there. There's no reason to do that. I think we've got a fine leader here who's ready to go now. And she's going to need help. And so I'm going to help her. It's just as simple as that. So that's what we're announcing. And we'll see how it goes here.
Good news of that today, right?
Yeah.
Big announcement.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It is.
And you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Now, I'm just out of curiosity. You're friends with Terry Goddard, who is the likely Democratic nominee.
Yes.
Any hard feelings?
Well, not by me.
Well, I think we just stumbled on something there.
Well, you know, I'm sure he's not thrilled with that. But I had lunch with Terry a month or so ago, and I think he was frankly concerned that I was going to run. And I said, no, I'm not going to. But I told him I'm going to support Governor Brewer. And I don't know whether she's going to end up running. You never know whether she's going to win the primary. She's probably going to have a primary. And, I think Terry's fine in many ways. But I'm going to support her as long as she's in the game.
Terry's on line two for you.
not happy. Yeah, I hesitate to do that because he does have a grand jury at his disposal. Terry's fine, but, you know, that's the way it goes. I think it's too much to ask at this point in time. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I think she's the one, not him.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this announcement, and I'm assuming some others, you mentioned Mary Peters there, who had been removed as a candidate as well. Is this announcement kind of a way of circling the wagons, to use a phrase, around Governor Brewer in the light that she is going to face 1, 2, 3, who knows how many in the Republican primary?
You know, yes, because, that's what they need to do. I mean, let's face it, Terry's a formidable opponent. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are united. To some extent. I mean, in other words, they don't have a primary, so he's their guy. Right. And, these other guys, there's a lot of wannabes out there. They're fine. I know a couple of them. They're fine. But, A, they couldn't beat Goddard, in my view. And, B, why you would want them when you've got this governor, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. Now, there are some people who just say, I'd rather have the state just go down in flames here rather than ever vote for a tax increase, even if it's temporary. And I just think that's unrealistic. That's easy to say. The problem with being governor is you have to govern. And so even though you're a lifelong conservative anti-tax person, you got to govern. And you got to balance the budget.
Right.
The money's not there. You got to do something. You can't just sit around from the sidelines. You're not on the sidelines. You're it right there. So,
she was handed a tough budget. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the revenues and they've been down unbelievable. And she's had to make she's had to make some very tough decisions.
And she did it.
And she did.
She didn't cave. She hung in there. And so, I think the more they get to know her now and examine that aspect of it right now, that she is a tough leader for very tough times, and that's what we need, combined with let's see how she does this next year. And she needs to be judged on how she does. So,
sounded like a slogan, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Hey, I like that.
Tough leader for tough times.
She is.
The way you were talking, it's almost like
you're
going to be a running mate, although we can't have a running mate here in the state.
We should change that lieutenant governor.
Yeah, we should change that.
Well, that apparently is being considered.
The other interesting thing, I think, that when you're dealing with difficult issues, difficult times here, anyone can be governor when you're flush with money and you're saying, well, should we give that money to this group or a little bit over here? That's when it's fun, if you're into the government spending, that's an easy deal. They're all good causes, and you make everybody happy and all that. To A, survive this budget crisis, and B, figure out how you move Arizona back into being a top tier state. That's tough, okay? the good thing is, this is it for her. You know, this is she can continue to call it as she sees it, because what does she care? The only thing that does anything good for her personally is success.
Right.
So she's going to try to do what's right here. In other words, this isn't a stepping stone. She's not going to run for the Senate after this or do something else. This is it for her.
Yeah, she's done after
this. And I think that's what you need right now. You need people to just call it as you see it. So I think she'll do that. So,
you're part of the Brew Crew.
I am part of the Brew Crew. That's right.
The Brew Crew.
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting. I did support Janet Napolitano last time, and I got no problem with that. I just pick the best person, and generally that's the Republican, but not always. And, you know, this time I think it is.
You mean you couldn't have supported Len Mutzel the last time when he ran against Janet?
I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it, no. Lee Mutzel?
Lee Mutzel,
President came out here and called him Lee. You know it's not going well.
The campaign can't be.
But the President of the United States can't get your name right when you're running for governor.
Good.
Not a good sign.
Not a big surprise. Anyway, there's that. Now, I want to go back to the... two quick questions here, because I... Gib, in a former life, one of his many former lives, he was over there working every day at the hospital, at the MIHS system there, but in particular at the Maricopa County Medical Center, and which has, you know, really a lot of tremendous assets there.
Oh,
the burn unit is like one of the best in the world, and you know, a very unusual place. You do get. Everybody,
we
all
saw
types.
Your wife over there
yeah, that's right.
She burned
what
her
you
hand.
Do? Yeah,
she burned
did.
Her hand with oatmeal.
That's right. That's right. Nice.
Wow.
Move. Nice move. Yeah, it's not good.
In the microwave. So, that was really a weird part.
So where do you go? I mean, this is where you go. Yeah, it's got a great burn unit.
Yeah.
But the point is, now we're talking about healthcare here, and this is somewhere a place where I clearly depart from the president. Mm-hmm. I do not support this the monstrosity he's coming up with, but. But that's my view. You were there.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? I mean, first, what's the state of health care at a county hospital like that? What's it like there? And then, you know, what about this plan? What's it going to do, do you think?
You know, it's a fact. I think there's some fallacies out there. First of all, I think to say that people aren't covered, you know, by health care is, you know, there's not a person in the state of Arizona or any state that doesn't have access to health care. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I mean, now how to pay for that health care is always the question. But to think that there are people that don't have access to health care is just not right.
What's your definition of access to health care?
Well, I mean, it's if you are injured or sick, do you have the ability to go see a doctor? Now, does that mean at the emergency room or what? You know, yeah, it does mean that.
Because I was going to say I'm one of those not people right now without health care.
Right. But you that doesn't mean you couldn't walk into any emergency room, any hospital in Arizona, in Wyoming, or in New York.
What
and
about
not
Hawaii?
Be seen.
Right?
Hawaii.
I'd like to walk.
That's not a state.
You would definitely be seen for anything.
Right.
You know? And that's.
But then I would also get a few $1,000 bill that I couldn't pay.
Not necessarily.
They wouldn't say.
Not necessarily.
Then those of us that would pick up the tab.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
I mean, what do you think the access program is? I mean, that's exactly what access is.
Because I know, you know, yesterday or earlier this week, the tragic announcement of the death of the East Valley Tribune coming at the end of the year. Got a lot of friends.
Healthcare.
Yeah. A lot of them are, you know, sure they're getting a severance for, you know, how many ever weeks work there. But for a lot of them, it's like, I'm not going to have health care after 2 or 3 months.
I think both their reporters are affected, weren't they?
But
those are the two guys who watch the Leno show.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it.
By the way, game one of the World Series, 20 million. Same night, Leno, 4 million.
Well, the World Series should beat him.
24. Okay,
no,
he's a big Leno fan. Isn't
always.
Yeah, he loves it.
Well, I would just say this. You know, there is a ton of access to health care in this country, and to say otherwise is, you know, let's call this what it is. You know, I mean, you know, we're trying. These are Democrats trying to build more Democrats.
There you go.
I mean, let's face it. You know, I mean, you create a program, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that creates a dependency. Then you get to have those people dependent on the government.
So would you like to get rid of Medicare now?
What's that?
Would you like to get rid of Medicare?
Well, that's what Obama's saying. He's going to cut $400 billion out of it in the next 10 years.
Well, you
that's how they make it revenue neutral.
Yeah, which won't happen. That's another fallacy.
But I would point to Medicare as a success.
$400 billion.
Everybody who has it seems to like it.
Now, Medicare is a success, but yeah, that's a fallacy on the funding because, yeah, the way it's revenue neutral is they're gonna do these cuts, and you know what will happen. Mm-hmm. When those cuts start getting ready to kick in, then, you know, every old guy in town is going to be, you know, beating the drum, and then they'll restore them, and then all of a sudden it wasn't revenue neutral anymore.
But the reason he's winning on health care right now is for a number of reasons.
I don't think he's winning.
He's not winning.
The reason he's winning is because he's got the votes. He's got more Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate.
And the NL truckup is a win.
They keep saying that the Republicans are holding this thing up. They don't even need any of the Republican votes.
Yeah, they can just do this. The Democrats aren't with them.
There's a good section that they cannot bring about. I mean, I hope not.
If it was such a great deal, if the shoe was on the other foot, and if the Republicans had the numbers, and this was going to revolutionize and improve the country, and the people that voted for it were going to get credit for it, they'd all get in line and say, "Let's do it." Mm-hmm. So the fact that the Democrats aren't coming on board tells me they know there's going to be hell to pay for. Yeah,
it is surprising
pages.
Though to me. It looked like a month ago it was going south. And then it has been revived. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got a shot at passing this thing.
Obama said in an interview. He said, I can't remember, with whatever network it was, he said, you know, health care will be declared dead 4 or 5 times before we finally get it passed.
They're going to pass something.
They'll pass something because they have the votes.
Which then comes out as a win for him.
Correct. I'm saying politically, whatever happens, he'll declare it a victory. And I don't know if that's the politics.
If you saw 60 Minutes on Sunday, you'll see that there's a cottage industry in fraud in Medicaid and Medicare. There's $80 billion a year. I mean, you know, if the government can't maintain itself within that system. I mean, how would we expect to maintain itself?
It's not going
to
work.
The other thing is, last year we knew the H1N1, virus was coming.
They couldn't even get one little disease right.
I mean, we're supposed to have 45 million inoculations as of today, and they can't. My kid is going to school, and they're going, yeah, we may have 30,000 coming to the school this year. It's like,
yeah,
what the hell
flu
is that?
Over.
We talked to Australia earlier, and I mentioned a friend of mine came back here to the States and had breakfast with him here a month ago. And we were talking about some of the differences. And he's an American, although he's dual citizenship now. He grew up here and spent most of his life here. And now that he's been in Australia for a few years, he was going like, none of us can believe your debate about health care. And he whipped out this card, and it's like, yeah, this is our health care down there. It works great. And it's like,
what's the population of Australia versus this country?
I don't know, but I mean.
Well, I know. It's like they say, well, Canada.
It's like 300 million versus 4 million.
Exactly. It's the size of, whatever.
Phoenix.
So Saturday, I live in the Carefree.
Right.
And we don't get mail delivery. You have to go to the post office. And it's Saturday, the mail delivery window closes at 11. And I know that. So if I think I might need something, I get there before 11. Mm-hmm. So I walk in there. That wasn't going to be an issue this week. So I'm getting my mail out of my P.O. box. And I turn around. I look at my watch. It's 11:01. They're closing the door. It's one of those half doors. And a guy comes running in with one of those, hey, there was a package that couldn't fit in your box. Mm-hmm. And he starts banging on the window. And I'm watching this whole thing happen. And the lady says, we close at 11. And he goes, I got 11 now. She goes, it's 11:01. They're having this three-minute conversation through the thing. I'm thinking, this is the fucking government.
Right.
Flip the coin. If that would have been FedEx at 11:01, they'd have brought it at midnight. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sitting there going,
that's another one of my pet peeves, though. Why don't we get rid of the post office?
I walk by it, and the guy's arguing with the
privatize.
Privatize the post office.
Well,
we used to need it. We don't need it anymore. What does it do? Primarily, it delivers bills
for
business.
Well, first off, how much mail do you get now anymore?
Bills.
I don't get them online.
I get bills electronically.
I get them online.
Well,
yeah.
You get bills. You get solicitations.
I've cut down on my mail delivery by going electronic, paperless.
But it's a great service for the business community, I guess. But that's not a proper role of government. Yeah, it should be privatized. Forget it.
Right. You could sell a stamp to McDonald's. You could just have a little McDonald's.
Bullshit.
They would pay for the entire.
They had to dump the whole post office.
So when I walked by, that guy said, I said, good luck. This is your future healthcare provider. And he looked at me and he went, fuck. And this is a guy about 70 years old. He had to dust the cobwebs off that word. He's like, fuck. She's right there. I can hear her. It's 1101, dude.
Wow.
And I'm inside, too.
Okay, let's do the Woody here. I don't know what happened to Woody.
The Woody's right there.
Who's going to hold him?
Guest
of honor.
You're our guest. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've been all over the board on this guy here on the president, but I'm going to have to go back another direction here. This week's Woody goes to Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh hit the Sunday TV shows this week. Well, he bravely went on Fox News Sunday to let people know that he really, really hates President Obama. He can't find one good thing to say about him, literally. He said he couldn't name one positive thing the president had done in the last year. Not even the old, he kept us safe from terrorist attack mantra that he used to say when he was struggling for something positive about old W. But he had plenty of bad things to say. He said that Obama is not interested in any way with winning the war in Afghanistan. He said the president's visit to pay his respects to the families of returning deceased troops at Dover Air Force Base was just a photo op and that he didn't care about the families. He called the president a man-child who is very narcissistic and has an out-of-this-world ego. That's the pot calling the kettle black, except he probably wouldn't use the word black. El Rushbo accused the president of intentionally destroying the economy as part of an overall plan to deny Americans freedom and liberty. Plain and simple, according to Limbaugh, Barack Obama is currently America's greatest enemy. Now, Limbaugh is way over the line here. It's true, he's just an entertainer. We ought to ignore him, not to be taken seriously. The problem is that millions of rockheads do take him seriously. They take his word as gospel, and some of them are more than rockheads. They're potentially dangerous nutcases who could be pushed over the edge into thinking they're being patriots by injuring the President of the United States. And Limbaugh's outrageous rhetoric also further coarsens the already rough debate in America today, where government is more about posturing and self-aggrandizement than problem-solving. There's a fine line between satire and ridicule, between criticism and hate. Limbaugh crossed that line this week. His hateful speech doesn't help America. It hurts these United States. We need to be united in these difficult times, and Barack Obama is our president. You can disagree with him. You can work against his policies, fine. But to degrade and demean him reflects poorly not just on you, but on our nation. Rush Limbaugh gets the Woody.
There you go. It's hard to believe the NFL owners or the NFL did not want him as a co-owner.
Yeah.
I'm just glad this none of this happened back when W was president, where people called him a loser and said he was an idiot and wrote off-Broadway plays about how to assassinate him and stuff like that.
But Rush is the titular head of the Republican Party.
Yeah, there's a difference. Yeah, that's right. 30 million people listening to him.
Harry's not the leader of the Democratic Party.
Hey, Harry Reid's in trouble, man. That guy.
Wouldn't that be great if he lost? I think I'm all for him losing.
I think he's going to lose. Keep hearing.
The one I'm watching tonight is that New York 23 race.
Yeah.
That conservative and Didi Scozafasa, I think her name is, and
was schizophrenic.
Yes, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like. Republicans have held that seat since 1852. I can't imagine them losing it, but it just, you know, with the Newt Gingrich and the Sarah Palin, that was bizarre.
They nominated, behind closed doors, a woman who really, it's hard to come up with anything in the Republican Party that she supports. And I don't know what you expect out of that one, except, you know, you're going to have a little revolution on your hands. In other words, let's say she's pro-choice, which she is.
She was, yeah.
Let's say pick two or three other issues.
Right. Pro-stimulus.
Well, you know, whatever.
She's pro-gay marriage, I think.
Whatever, yeah. That's fine. But now you're throwing in she's for card check. You go right down the line. Wait a minute. No. Why are you Republican again? I can't think of anything.
But it amazed me when I read that of the 29 New York congressional seats, I think that number is correct, depending on who wins tonight, they'll have two.
Republicans?
Yeah. And I think fewer than 10 total in the entire New England area, right. Northeast, which is stunning.
Well, that tells you something.
Northeast.
A bunch of commies up there. Yeah.
But it used to be, I mean, the Northeast you do, well, the Rockefellers, Loyal Likers.
Olympia Snow and Susan Collins, people like that. Now it's just them. Mm-hmm. The rest are gone.
Well, everybody's leaving New Jersey. I mean, New York.
Everybody's leaving New York. That's a good example. How not to govern, by the way.
I heard something interesting. There, between 8 and 9 million people call New York home, mm-hmm. New York City. Mm-hmm. 44,000 people, so think of the pie chart, pay 50% of the income tax.
Yeah, that's not mm-hmm. right. Yeah, and here's the problem.
Yeah,
this is what people don't remember, and this is the
tax
problem. This is the problem I have with the Democratic Party, is if you go tax those people,
they leave.
They just left. They said screw it. Mm. Or you could tax the hell out of them. Fine, you'll get some little limited revenue out of that, and then guess what? They'll figure out. They'll just cash it in. They'll say, forget it. I'm not mm-hmm. going to be hiring. I'm not going to be investing. Right. I'm going to be putting my money elsewhere where you can't get it anymore. And so New York is a perfect example. And many other states, Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, who mm-hmm. you know I know pretty well, I like her a lot personally, terrible job as governor because she succumbed to this liberal democratic soak the rich idea. And guess what? They came up with less revenue. This is the problem. The answer to more revenue, I do believe, I mean, this is an age-old debate, but the answer to more revenue is to empower people to be on their own, not to empower government to try to confiscate it. It doesn't work.
All the rich people I know that live here, when they take off, they go to Turkey and and hide
Greece,
all their money over there.
Or Hawaii.
I'm going to go to
Italy.
That country. The next foreign country I'm going to is Hawaii. I'm going to line that one up.
Maybe by the time you go, we'll bring it in as a state. That's extra revenue for us.
Right after.
You wouldn't like Hawaii anyway, because kids drown over there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, last question. We'll go. Cardinals put on just an
wow.
It's just a shocking performance.
How much time do we have left?
Well, you know, I did talk to Senator McCain this morning, and after we talked about the few things we were talking about, he said, and you know him pretty well.
Yeah.
What the fuck happened to the Cardinals? I said, well, did you see it? And he goes, no, I think he was on the plane or something, but I read about it. I said, yeah, well, you're lucky you didn't see it. That was a disaster.
It was ugly.
It seemed like they've been playing pretty, like they played great against Seattle.
Thank God they're going on the road this week.
That Giants game on Sunday night.
Oh, the Giants game. Yeah.
That's one of their best games in years.
They dominated the Giants. It wasn't as close as the score.
The Cardinals screwed me this week, and I told Mark this before we started the show. I have a fantasy football team, right? And I have the Ravens defense as my primary defense, but they're playing Denver. You know, Denver's pretty good. So it's like I picked up the Cardinals defense, figuring Carolina can't score to save their lives.
And they got smoked.
Oh, yeah. I got negative 4 points with the Cardinals defense this weekend.
I had never seen anything like that on both sides of the ball. It was a disaster.
The only good thing was, as an NFL Sunday Ticket subscriber, I got to watch Green Bay and Minnesota.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, thanks. I had to watch this debacle. Well, I just think it's a good we don't know what's going to happen with the Cardinals. So they could go blow out the Bears Sunday, or they could get blown out. You have no idea. No. Or you don't know half to half. The game a couple weeks ago, 21-0. And then they barely won.
The thing that has surprised me about the NFL, and obviously I follow it closely, is unlike past years, there have not been that many upsets. The Cardinals game is one of the big upsets.
Yeah.
Philly losing at Oakland a couple weeks ago. But for the most part, the parity has not existed this year. The good teams are winning by blowouts, and the bad teams are really, really bad. There isn't a lot of in-between, whereas before, you could go into a week, and, if there were, 8-10 games on the schedule, not know for sure who's going to win maybe 7 of those. Now it's like the Saints are good, the Colts are good, the Patriots are good.
You know, one thing I heard, Ron Wolfley, who I really, really like a lot.
Wolf's great.
I got to get him in sometime.
That would be fun because I don't know him, but I love listening to him. He's fantastic. And he made a good comment because his partner there in the morning was saying, this is not right. You've got to, they didn't. They had such a bad game, and they didn't show up. And this is an easy one to say. You got to psych up, and you've got to will yourself to victory. And he went on like that. You got to get in there, and even if not going, you got to will yourself to victory. And he made a good point. And anyone who's ever played sports understands this. That is basically bullshit. Okay, look, how many of us? I mean, you played. I still play sports. It's all I do. In my spare time. You go out there and you're saying, okay, I'm going to win this match. I'm going to win this game. I'm ready. Okay, this is key. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And you go out there and you suck. Yeah. And you go, come on now. I got to do it. I got to. And you can't do it. And that is, so it has nothing to do with you don't want it enough or you're weak mentally or you just didn't psych up. Hey, some days you suck, and there's nothing you
can
do about
it. And they're pros, too. The other team's pros, too.
Yeah. Thing that has amazed me about the Cardinals this year is they've won on the road, and they've been awful at home.
They're one and three.
And they almost lost the Houston game.
Yeah, they almost choked that.
You know, so, I don't know. You know,
I cannot figure them out, though.
I mentioned the Super Bowl jinx. I think it exists.
No, I told you. I predicted 9-7, remember, and you guys were all laughing at me because you all picked a worse record. I still think we're okay.
They're 4-3 right now, right?
They're 4-3.
You know what? They should finish up, I said this earlier, mm-hmm. 6 more wins and 3 more losses.
Yep.
It'd be 10-6.
Yeah.
And they'd win the West.
Look out for the 49ers the second half.
You know what? The 49ers are a lot better than
I watched part of that game against Indy.
They've got a great defense.
They've got a good defense. Yeah. Alex Smith is playing really well at quarterback for him. And Michael Crabtree, the rookie wide receiver who held out for a long time, he is really starting to come into his own.
I'm worried about my team. But the good news is they're the only team we've got to worry about. Seattle sucks.
And St. Louis is awful.
Forget St. Louis. So we only got one team to worry about.
That Monday night
we
game.
We need to win that game when we play them again.
It's Monday night in December. I think December 14th, at San Francisco.
Cool, that's a big game. Let's go. Let's do the show from there.
So I called my dad over the weekend. He's in Kansas City, and he's a big Chiefs fan. And I said, hey, Dad, did you know that after Vince Lombardi died, his widow moved to Missouri? And he goes, really? Why? And I said, because she wanted to get as far away from pro football as possible. Because the Rams win a game, so they're 2-13?
Yeah.
Something like that. It's just miserable.
Oh, that's bad.
By the way, one of the amazing things, speaking of the Chiefs, you know, Larry Johnson got himself in trouble for his...
Wow, that's
his
a shocker.
Well, and it was a... That wasn't a shocker.
What
the shocker
was he saying?
He basically called him a fag.
Okay, that's what I figured.
The sports reporters and all that, and Twittered it.
Then he reported it. And he said it again, right?
Yeah, he said it on Twitter. You know, the amazing... I think he said it on Twitter. The amazing thing was his agent, who has to do the mea culpa, he goes... I didn't realize that was a slur. He said I knew the N-word was, but I didn't know that
he
was.
He said that?
Yes.
The agent?
Like,
the agent?
It's like, dude, what planet are you on?
At least blame it on a typo.
Yeah, really.
You know, I'm going to put flag in there.
Oh, yeah, flag, fig.
But he's a fig.
He's a fig.
Larry Johnson is toast in Kansas City at this point.
Okay, one last thing. We're gonna, but did you see it? This is bizarre to me. I was in the paper today. That they were giving kudos to Edward Norton and a couple other people. Yeah, because this is a New York City Marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah, because and he ran for charity or whatever. They had all these celebrities who ran for charity, and Edward Norton finished the marathon. He actually had a really good time and all that. So, you know, great. Good for him. He seems like a great guy. And then it said... The guy says we were really appreciative that he didn't do like the others and send his assistant or surrogate. Yeah, their personal assistants. Like, okay, what are we doing today? Well, you're going to run the marathon. Why am I doing that? Because I signed up. Well, why aren't you running it? Because you're my assistant.
You believe that?
Yeah.
They had, and it was like they all did. They all sent their personal assistant to run the marathon.
And I know somebody who's running that before. You kind of got to, like, train ahead of time.
Wow.
It's not like you wake up, I'm going to run a marathon this afternoon.
That doesn't seem to be in the job description, does it? Wow, that's crazy. All right, is that a show?
That's a show.
That's a show. All right, good. See you next week.
All right.
Bye.
Good job.
Hey, a couple of you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was good, huh?
Yeah, awesome. Hey, one quick thing.
Did you see
KJ a couple of weeks ago got...
He's a pig.
He was in San Francisco and he said he got robbed.
Oh, yeah.
I heard about that, yeah.
He got robbed.
Woo. Yeah, he got robbed or something.
Yeah. Guy was trolling for colon.
No, he apparently like was trying to help somebody with their luggage or something, and then somebody ripped off his car.
He was helping an elderly person.
Good.
Yeah. Good Samaritan, and then someone came up and grabbed his.
Someone came up and blew him. And no, but he said
he's a fig.
But he came wearing this thing saying I was robbed. But you're a lawyer. He was a victim of theft, right?
If you take from a person, isn't it like if you take from a person?
Yeah, are you saying how
robbery?
Well, my point is, it's not robbery. If you set your backpack down and help somebody and turn around, it's gone. Well,
no,
that's
a theft. Yes.
Oh,
that'd
be
robbery.
If they take it off your person, it's a robbery.
But to a layperson,
I
know. But they reported in the papers, and he was a victim of robbery. I'm like, dude, you're the.